Howdy there, everybody. Welcome back to the Unknown Mining Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Hanshey, and I'm joined today by Nick Cook. Nick Cook is the chief geologist at Moss & Gold, and he's the technical advisor for Southern Cross Gold. In addition to his professional positions, he's also an honorary lecturer at St. Andrews, and he's been in the geology business for more than 20 years consecutively. So, Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, everybody.
So, Nick, on the Unknown Mining Podcast, we like to talk about things that the average geologist, the average investor, the average miner may not know. So then I'll just go straight to it and ask you, what's something that you find unknown in mining?
What's unknown? Well, actually, I think the value of the hand lens for geologists would have to be up there with high on my list. Although there's lots of smart things you can do, the start of the process is really a hand lens and some rocks.
Just a good little loop like this?
Yeah, or even get a really good one. Go and spend up and keep it tight around your neck.
This one, yeah. So how important then is a hand lens to a geologist? Like, what do you see as the problem then with geologists today and their lack of hand lens?
Well, there's a little bit of a trend in the university system in particular to go to the really smart end of the science without actually doing good description of rocks. And one of the key things, I think, is early on, especially in early in the career, is to really understand the description of rocks and minerals. And to do that well, you really need a hand lens, because wonderful things like cleavage in minerals and relationships and textures and so forth are best described with the use of a hand lens.
Yeah, I guess it's a little bit difficult to a young geologist or probably even some lab geologist to describe what you can see at 20 times magnification versus just like holding the rock very close to your face. But I guess there's a problem is people don't want to get their face on the rocks these days, at least maybe in the student section.
Yeah, exactly. And apparently we're meant to stop licking rocks as well. So geologists always used to lick rocks and do things like that. And now we're only meant to use our hand lens. And I've actually got a really cool story related to the hand lens. When I was an undergraduate, my geology professor, who was an expert in zeolites, picked up a rock and it had a tiny vein in it. And he said, oh, this must be the Permian because that zeolite mineral has changed. And about a year later, we actually proved that, yes, it was Permian because he could recognize the correct zeolite in the vein, and one volcanogenic rock looked the same as another to me, but that was the level of his hand lens skills, and I suppose it taught me something that has applied ever since. And I mean, if you go to PDAC or something like that, there's nothing better than seeing geologists walking down towards you with a drill core, where we've got the drill core and they've got a hand lens. That those are the sort of people sometimes that some weird geologists want to talk to about rocks.
Well, the best geologist is a weird geologist with a hand lens or a rock. So basically, the story you just described, though, is that your colleague, your professor with a hand lens basically turned that into a geochronological instrument.
Yeah, because he knew in detail the zeolites associated with the different ages of, in this case, depth of burial. He realized that we'd actually gone across a fault, even though it was just a small valley. And we actually ended up with drill hole data from a nearby coal mine that proved that there was a fault there. And that's how we worked it out. So, really quite an amazing start. And I use the hand lens all the time. And it relates to minerals, it relates to alteration, it relates to textures. So right across the broad spectrum of how you would interpret rocks, especially in the mineral exploration space, really, really important to get out there and be able to describe a rock fluently, I suppose, in terms of the minerals. And you should up here have as many mineral compositions in your head as you can. And then the textures, alteration, what it might be alteration minerals, because those things actually govern what fancy machines you might then go and use to try and determine more about the rock.
Yeah, I think though there's been a really big push in portable XRF and this these infrared systems, like the TerraSpec Halo and things like that. And some people might say, well, what can a hand lens give me that this portable analytical machine can't.
Yeah. Well, that is, I mean, that's a real issue. And it does actually help you make a decision if you can actually describe the rock. And you can see text is one thing, overprinting another. And perhaps these rocks look exactly the same. So our case in Finland, for example, is a whole lot of pink feldspathic rocks. Now, most people, when you hand that rock to them, would say, oh, this is a potassium feldspar. But in that part of the world, and a bit like the Cloncurry area and so forth, there's lots of pink albite rocks. And you can't necessarily pick that with a hand lens, but you might know it's feldspathic, especially if you have a smart scratcher that's, say, halfway between feldspar and quartz or something like that. And then you can get the XRF out, and if it's not potassium, it's a feldspar. And if it's only got aluminium and nothing else and you can't see any mica with the hand lens, you know it's probably albite. So that becomes particularly important in understanding alteration systems. So I like to think that the first stage being description from the hand lens will actually then start to govern where you go with what sort of smart machine you might have to attach to it.
Yeah, I really think that maybe it's better to look at the hand lens as the first tool rather than some type of auxiliary tool.
Yeah, exactly. Although if you have a really nice core shed, sometimes I think the first thing is to wet the core and just walk from one end to the other and just think about the very broadest scale and then start to get in there. And I mean, you really should, there should be a love of logging core. And I do find this issue that perhaps logging core is to some like a penalty or something rather, but it's the thing that if you're prepared to spend the time there and understand what the assemblages are, what the relationships are and textures, you can do a heck of a lot with a hand lens. You really can. And then there's a three-dimensional alteration story in the silicates that overprints amphibolite facies, polydeformed rocks. So it's a really cool story. And have you got anything specific to ask about that?
Yeah, I'm a geologist, so I'm going to ask immediately about the weird sulfides. How are you able to distinguish the sulfides just with the hand lens when it comes to, like, obviously gold is quite gold, but then when you start getting into arsenopyrite and other types of sulfides, okay, it's very similar.
Well, interesting story. So we would say one of the most exciting things up there is in the dark, because first up there's the UV lamp and the scheelite that's spatially associated with the gold. So the advantage with drilling in Finland in winter is you can turn out the lights and turn on the black lamp. So there's a spatial relationship, and you actually almost need to mark it in the dark and then look with the hand lens, because picking scheelite from other minerals is hard in the daylight. So there's that. And then there's a sulfide association, and that sulfide association typically goes from pyrite on the outside, you know, small liquid grains, into pyrrhotite. The rocks are magnetic, so you do see some magnetite associated with that. But then in terms of sulfides, you get cobalt, which is a slightly pinkish-grey appearance, and that is spatially associated with the gold. What's bizarre is they hardly see any arsenopyrite, and that's because there's so much cobalt in the host rock when the gold system happened that the arsenic all mixes with the cobalt and produces cobaltite, which is a cobalt arsenite. And wow. The cool thing about that, as soon as you know there's cobalt, cobaltite in the rock, in molecular proportions, that's cobalt to arsenic 1:1. So you can actually start seeing some near misses, I suppose, in terms of geochemistry when you start looking for cobaltite as a signature in the whole rock geochemistry. And all that comes from, I suppose, the realization that you can see cobalt minerals, in this case cobaltite, directly associated with the gold trend.
So you basically have just turned this tiny hand lens into a first pass geometallurgical tool when it comes to figuring out what's in your deposit and where.
Correct. Yeah, well, the other parts are a bit more complicated and required the microscope and SEM and so forth to realize that there was cobalt pentlandite and linneite, which is a weird cobalt mineral. And that was pretty fine grain, but first pass, pretty important, because in terms of geometallurgy, maybe we can float cobaltite or something like that, and the grades will be good associated with the high grade of gold. And, you know, there's great numbers like 30 meters at 9 grams equivalent. Wow. In there. So really good system. Although our friends to the north of us at Rupert did equally well and got another fantastic deposit of almost the same age, about 100 k's to the north. So it's a pretty exciting part of the world to be in at the moment.
Yeah, it's cool to hear about the projects going on in Finland and the Raja Palat project that Mawson Gold is working on. You know, we just talked about sulfides and probably went in over the heads for a lot of people, but not everybody is actually lucky enough to look at nice, beautiful sulfide assemblages. So how can the hand lens be your first pass tool in maybe complex zonation or fine grain alterations, like maybe in a porphyry system?
Okay. So yeah, this is almost like, this does people's head in actually, this system, because there's amphibolite facies. So there's beautiful coarse grain, polydeformed rocks that are amphibolite facies. And it's actually overprinted by probably an intrusive related system. And there's cool things like quartz tourmaline sulfide veins. But there is a three-dimensional alteration going from propylitic on the outside through albite rocks and into potassic and potassic sulfides. So you can actually see with the hand lens the overprinting of lower temperature silicate assemblages than the host rock, as opposed to the normal porphyry where, of course, we're heating up the volcanic rocks around to porphyry-type assemblages and alteration assemblages. But here, most of the mineralizing process is sub-amphibolite facies, so 250 degrees, 500 degrees, 500, 5 kilometers, 250 degrees. And you can see lower temperature assemblages, you know, lots of chlorite associated with the veins. So the usual way in which you would identify wall rock alteration can be done with the hand lens, but unusually, it's back to front compared with the host rocks. So the host rocks are being cooled by this system.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty incredible, because it sounds like if you pair the hand lens with the proper geologist, it can act as a structural tool, a mineralogical indicator, a geochemical tool, a geochronometer, and even a geothermometer if you pair it with the right geologist.
Yeah, exactly. So if you have a bunch of weird skills, say, in my case, I came from a department with a bunch of petrologists, you know, there's everything from metamorphic phase diagrams that tell you what compositions you would expect. And it does get a bit hard in the world of white micas. So in some rocks where there's white mica alteration, you might need the spectrometer or something like that. And we did try that, and we could actually see that there was a metamorphic white mica, and that was overprinted to produce a lower temperature phangetic white mica. And what's more, when we got the spec work done, you could actually see that there was visible gold associated with that part of the process. So we had a hint from our hand lens, but it did need a bit of smart follow-up. So, but you can save yourself a lot of money in going down the wrong rabbit hole with expensive analytical equipment by describing the rocks well for a start. Absolutely.
So that's the real secret. Get a good geologist with a good lens and then go from there.
Absolutely. And I think there's a few of my colleagues around the world who would agree with that.
Nick, it's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. I would like to say thank you to you and to Mawson Gold for joining us today. Do you have any last words about the hand lens, about exploration?
Take care, get out there with a hand lens and look at lots of rocks, and you'll get there.
Thanks so much, everybody. That was Nick Cook from Mawson Gold. And as always, I'm Aaron Hanshee. It's my pleasure to host another episode of the Unknown Mining Podcast. And until next time, keep on exploring the unknown.